debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The first rule of good talk radio is belt out your show. But I'm telling you, when the air is 480 parts particulate matter per cubic liter of air, which is literally 300 parts higher than the danger level, belting out your show just ruins your throat, your vocal cords, your lungs, and I reached a point where I can't deal with it anymore. So I put my mask, I've got one of these N95 masks, I've got the mask back on so that I can breathe fresh air. And it's amazing, when I take the mask off, boom, I can smell the forest fires again. And apropos of that, the world is melting down and Donald Trump is denying that climate change has anything to do with these forest fires. He came out yesterday to California, lied through his teeth, ridiculed science and scientists. This is a man who is hell-bent for leather to kill and destroy, in my opinion, as many Americans as possible. And I think he's doing it out of the psychopathology that Dr. Frank described. I don't think he's intentionally sitting around saying, oh, I'm going to kill people. But at some level, he has to know that the actions he's taking are producing that outcome. But in the category of that and of kind of Schadenfreude, and I don't know if this is going to be a wake-up call to this guy or not. Back in 2019, last year, there was a bill before the Oregon legislature to put a cap-and-trade program for fossil fuels, for carbon, into place here in Oregon. It would have gone a long way toward stopping climate change, or at least, you know, as long a way as we can do with our 5 million people here in Oregon. And 11 Republican senators walked out. We have 30 seats in the Senate. There was one that was vacant due to a death. And because those 11 people left, there was not a quorum, so it prevented the Senate from doing anything, including the action on climate change. One of the senators, one of the guys who was one of the ringleaders in this thing, was a guy named Fred Girod, G-I-R-O-D. He's an Oregon senator, state senator. And yesterday, his house burned down to the ground. The Oregonian, our local newspaper, Fred Girod stood near the edge of a steep drop between what remained of his house and the Santiam River, grasping the destruction. The walls of the one-story home had collapsed, leaving two stone columns and a chimney that rose out of the rubble. The heat and flames had twisted the frame of the deck where he would sit to watch bald eagles, ospreys, and sunrises. It hurts, Girod said, hands in his dark denim jeans. Well, I would say to Mr. Girod, you, number one, I'm very sorry that you lost your home. I do not wish that on anyone. I don't wish it on you, Mr. Girod. But you owe the people of Oregon an apology. Period, full stop. You know, not anything that any of us would wish on anybody. I mean, it's a true tragedy. I mean, just imagine that. Losing your home, losing your books, losing your personal papers, losing your photographs, losing your memories. And in his case, he lost his three cats. He and his wife got out safely, thankfully. I'm guessing that Mr. Girard is deeply in the pocket of or taking cash from. Now, this is just a guess, but I can't explain why else he would be saying this, of some aspect of the fossil fuel industry. Or he's just buried deeply in the right-wing echo chamber of talk show hosts who are in part funded by the fossil fuel industry and right-wing think tanks that are funded by the fossil fuel industry. But in any case, he owes Oregonians an apology, and maybe this will wake him up. Well, apparently not. The Daily Beast just reported that Girard said, quote, climate change is not the problem. The environmentalists have loaded up the timber area with nothing but fuel, and that cost me my house. He said, if you want to blame it on climate change, go ahead. All the belly aching is absolutely unconscionable. They make it so you can't harvest trees. It just loads up. A giant bomb of fire went off. Bottom line, I don't know of any environmentalists who are opposed to rational logging. The problem is that if you go into forests, if you leave behind the old growth or the larger trees, if you carefully manage the forest, it actually improves the health of the forest and makes it more fire resistant. Louise and I did this when we lived in Vermont. We owned 400 acres of forest land. Land was cheap in Vermont back in the 90s. We had 400 acres of forest land, and we hired a guy with a horse. And he would go into the forest, into our forest. Now, the state gave us a 25% discount on our property taxes on that forest land if we did this. And he would go into the forest with a horse. Actually, I think he had two horses. And he would identify trees that he was going to cut. He'd mark them with a giant red X. And then Louise and I would walk through the forest and approve what he had done. And we didn't know what we were doing, so we just approved pretty much everything he did. This guy was an expert on forest management. And then he would take his horse, he would go in with a chainsaw, cut down those trees that he had identified as the ones that would actually open up the canopy so that the larger, older hardwood trees could grow really well. And there was stands of pine and stuff. But basically, the amount of wood that he got out of that forest not only paid for his fee, but also gave us, you know, a couple thousand bucks at the end of the day. So it's profitable to log forests that way. And that's the way that everybody that I know who's, you know, a progressive person in charge of forest, you know, advocating for forest management is talking about. But the big timber companies, they don't want to do that. They want to come in and clear cut. They want to come in and just wipe everything out. You drive through Oregon, drive from here in Portland over to the seacoast, and you will pass hillsides, mountainsides, forests that are just gone. It's just empty. You know, nothing but stumps. That's not healthy either. But that's the most profitable way to log. And so when people come along and say, oh, hey, you know, you shouldn't be logging that way. You should be logging in a way that's more rational, that's more careful. They don't have to do it with horses. This guy was, you know, an old school guy. You could do it with, you know, on logging trails, you could do it with tractors. You know, it's not impossible to log rationally. As I said, I've been there, I've done that. I used to own a chunk of forest, almost a square mile of forest. The problem is that the forest, the timber companies, who are basically now increasingly in bed with the fossil fuel companies, their main sales pitch is, we've got a clear cut, because that's the most profitable way to do it. And that's essentially the subtext of Trump's message yesterday about forest management. Now, you know, Gavin Newsom kind of shut him down by pointing out, as Trump was saying, well, you got terrible forest management here in California. And Newsom said, well, 57% of the forests in California are owned by you, sir, by the federal government. Only 3% of the forest land in California is owned by the state. 29%, I think it is, 20-some-odd percent, whatever the balance is owned by private interests, like the forest that Louise and I used to own in Vermont. It's not impossible. In fact, it's not even difficult to manage forests in a reasonable way. But the big timber companies are like, if we can't clear cut it, screw it. And, you know, we're going to continue putting political pressure on and whatnot. And then they get these useful idiots like Fred Drudd saying, oh, you know, it's this is because of the environmentalists. No, it's not because of environmentalists. It's because of climate change. The vinters here in Oregon are documenting that the growing season for grapes has expanded is a week to 2 weeks earlier than it was just in the 70s. That's climate change. That's global warming. Global warming has set California, Oregon, Utah, Colorado, parts of Arizona, parts of Montana, Washington State on fire. Bob in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Bob, it says here you are a retired forest management instructor.
Yes, sir. I spent 30 years teaching at a college here, and fire was a big part of our curriculum. And when you got pyrophytic communities like the West Coast and the Southeast, we would manage those fires, as did the Native Americans, with controlled burns. But those controlled burns could never be implemented in the kind of conditions that California faces, with extensive droughts, high winds, heat, unbelievable heat, 120 degrees.
Right.
So we could never.
So shouldn't they be selectively logging those things, but doing it in a way that's environmentally conscious?
Well, the Forest Service, that's what makes me mad about Trump, is the Forest Service has intense regulations on management and removal of timber. You have to follow those guidelines that we've put in place since the 60s is when they started adopting some real intense environmental protections for forest management. Last year, the Trump administration wiped our environmental regulations for logging to the bone. They can do anything they want. And he stands there and says, we're not managing correctly. We can't sweep the forest. We never have swept them. We burned that understory to keep that ladder fuel down from getting into the explosive situations there are. Yeah, there are some exploding trees, some conifers in high heat. Alive ones, when they're packed with resin, they will explode. This isn't a dead trees on the forest floor, but we have to maintain that duff on the forest floor for decomposition to feed the forest and keep the soil dry, wet. And I heard a researcher last week talk about he's been 30 years as a Cal firefighter, and he said he's never seen the forest floor moisture as low as it is right now. And when you get that low, that forest floor will burn for weeks and weeks and weeks to have a mop-up crew come in there and try to keep those sparks down. But it's because of the climate change and the global warming we're facing, we cannot even manage those forest types anymore.
Right. And that forest floor ends up burning like the peat bogs in Europe that are literally 10,000 years old. As they dry out, they catch on fire for years, actually.
You're exactly right, Tom. You're exactly right. We got to face the truth, and it's the climate change that's affecting these forests. I've lost four students out west, one in Granite Mountain and one in Storm King, two in Storm King Mountain. Forest firefighters are a brave, brave bunch, and they're just being overused, and they're not being appreciated. And they're being
so you've had people that you taught who have died in these fires?
Yes, we taught hotshot training. We had one student graduate become a smoke jumper. That's a very difficult position to acquire. You got to be top of the top of the top. But we did have a lot of hotshot crew fighters, and I've lost three students who are hotshots in going out west and the east to fight these fires.
Thank you for sharing your expertise with us, Bob. It's much appreciated. Gariel in Seattle.
Yes.
Am I saying your name right?
You sure are, Tom. My issue is voter disenfranchisement by disaster. Sure, we got this stuff going on here in Washington, Oregon, and California. We got lots of displaced people. That also happens in other parts of the country where you get hurricanes, tornadoes, whatever. Now, all states have officials who regulate elections. They should be going public right now in front of all of the media and saying what the plan is for voting for people who are no longer where they normally live.
Right. Has Washington State offered any instructions to people who've lost their homes?
I haven't seen anything in our news media here whatsoever. And I've been listening and watching. I tried to get through to Maria Cantwell's office, and I didn't get a call back. They're working remotely. But I think this is something that needs to be discussed right now. We need the plan in motion. They should go public. It should be addressed sooner rather than later.
Yeah. You know, your senior elections official is your Secretary of State. That's where I would start. Yesterday in the Oregonian, our statewide newspaper, owned by a New York company, there was a piece about how if you have lost your home to the fire, you can still vote. And they're setting up actual physical voting stations to accommodate those folks. In fact, the phrase I heard this morning on Oregon Public Broadcasting was, if you've lost your home, it doesn't mean you've lost your vote. So, or your voice, I think was how they said it. But, excellent. They were talking about the vote. Yeah, so that's a start. And I'm guessing the Gavin Newsom, California, Oregon, and Washington have a relatively recent tradition, the last 30, 40 years, of really aggressively wanting democracy, wanting people to vote. Contact your Secretary of State's office and see what they have to say, Gary. But
I'll do that. Thank you.
It is an issue. It absolutely is an issue. Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. And let's keep in mind, these are not just the only three states that are having massive wildfires. It's happening in a dozen western states right now. And it's not because a dozen western states have not been raking their damn forest floors. It's because of global warming. Randy in Ottawa, Iowa. Hey, Randy. Is the smoke getting to you guys yet?
No. Well, it's kind of splitting me. It's going north and it's going south right now.
Yeah, it's over Idaho and Montana right now.
Yeah. I've got a thing here, a remedy that I used in my garage to take dust out when I sweep the floor. And it mm-hmm. will move a lot of air and filter a lot of air. Not like the HEPA filters, which it's the pre-filter for my Honeywell HEPA filters. But it's just a large carbon sheet that comes in a box. Under Honeywell's name, it is Pre-Filter A. And there's another product called Best Air. And these sheets of carbon, activated carbon on this pre-filter, you can take small wire ties, electrical ties, and cut it to the shape of a box fan or any other fan that moves a lot of air. And just take the wire ties or the electrical ties.
Or duct tape
and
it down.
Tie the pre-filter to the back side, the suction side of the box fan, or mm-hmm. any kind of a fan. It will move that air through there so fast, even way faster than a home HEPA filter. And the activated carbon filters work great for cleaning stuff like that up. So that
it just occurred to me, Randy, is I'm pretty sure that one of the vacuum cleaners we have here in this house has a HEPA filter in it. And I wonder if just disconnecting it from the bag, so it's not actually operating like a vacuum cleaner, and turning it on so it's just moving, hundreds of cubic feet of air a minute through itself, might clean the air in the house.
Vacuum cleaners create way too much heat. You'd be adding a problem to your problem. And they don't really move.
Why is the heat a problem? I mean, right now I've got the air conditioner on to try to, moisten the coils so that they'll catch some of those particles.
Yeah.
I could use some heat.
These pre-filters cost $9 a box, and one box will cover a 20-inch box fan, and it will move a lot of air. And you can get them at Menards or any home improvement store.
Anything relating to filtering air here in Oregon, whether it's on Amazon or whether it's at Home Depot or whatever, they're sold out. They're completely
You can get
gone.
Them online There's, as well.
Okay, thanks a lot, Randy. Good to hear from you. Joan in Rochester, Minnesota. Hey, Joan, what's up?
Well, I was going to talk to you something about this global warming and the forest fires. There's some mm-hmm. water table in this country, and I don't know whether it has a big part in helping water plants from under the ground. But all the corporations that are taking the water from our water table and bottling it and selling it all over the country and depleting that water supply that belongs to you and me, and they're making money from it. And in one show I saw one time, they were even had these big bubbles on a ship of water that they were taking to another country. And I wondered, is there anything that makes sense that they should have to stop doing that, because it may be that it makes a difference with the plants in our forest and in our country?
Yeah. It's not affecting our forests, but it is affecting drinking water. You know, towns drill wells into these aquifers, individuals drill wells into them. The answer to this, Joan, is stop buying bottled water. When you buy bottled water in plastic bottles, you're getting literally thousands, in some cases as many as 10,000 individual tiny microplastic particles that you are drinking, and they clog up your internal organs the same way this smoke here that we've got in Oregon does from breathing. Bottled water is not good for you. So start drinking tap water.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The whole bottled water business, by and large, is just insanely corrupt, particularly Nestle's role in it. Judy in Denver, it says you want to disagree with me about something. What's up, Judy?
Yeah, on cap and trade. The EU tried cap and trade for, and they might still be using it, I don't know. But this was before Donald took office. But they had tried cap and trade for over 10 years. And they found it was easily corruptible. And there was an increase of carbon into the atmosphere. And the U.S. also did a form of cap and trade, and they found the same thing. So
not true,
I don't think it's a viable.
Judy, I don't know where you're getting your information, but that's BS. Number one, yes, there have been increases in carbon in the atmosphere in the EU. It's got nothing to do with cap and trade. It's got to do with population growing and the economy growing. It's probably declined in the last year. Number two, the reason why statues and buildings in the United States that were literally disintegrating back in the 1980s and the early 1990s are no longer disintegrating because there's no longer sulfuric acid raining down on top of them. Remember acid rain? Is because George Herbert Walker Bush put a cap and trade program in place to control sulfur dioxide. And that program is still in place and it is still preventing sulfur dioxide. Cap and trade does work. Yes, you know, any kind of program can be corrupted if the special interests get, you know, aggressive enough. And yes, it does create secondary markets for the traders that everybody can profit off of and they can financialize it. And cap and trade isn't the best solution. This Oregon legislature that I've been talking about here, Fred Girard or whatever his name is, he was opposed, and in fact, the entire Republican Party here in Oregon was opposed to cap and trade around carbon emissions in Oregon. But they weren't making the argument that it doesn't work. They were making the argument that it's some sort of weird socialist plot. You know, basically, they were just doing the bidding of the fossil fuel industry, which they're continuing to do. But cap and trade is a hell of a lot better than nothing. And obviously, the best thing would be a tax on carbon, just like, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush tried or considered doing a tax on sulfur dioxide. They concluded that the tax would not work. Politically, it was unviable. They couldn't get it passed. And so they went with cap and trade. And sure enough, within 5 years, we ended the acid rain problem. So, Judy, I don't know where you're getting your information. You can tweet it to me if you can find it, and I'll take a look at it. And if I'm wrong, I'll correct myself on the air tomorrow. But I'm pretty sure that your information is not correct. Teresa in Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Teresa, what's up?
I want to know, when the sewage department cleans the water and then releases it into the ocean, wouldn't we be better off here in California if they cleaned the water that we use and then release it into the forest?
Yeah, it's just not physically practical. I mean, most of these forests that are burning right now are in the mountains, so you'd have to pump it up, which is a very expensive proposition.
But not to use it as for fire fighting, but every day, rather than allow the forest to become drier, drier, drier. And if you're doing it slowly every day, wouldn't it become economical? I mean, versus fighting all these damn fires?
It wouldn't. It would consume an enormous amount of electricity to run those pumps, and that would, you know, much of that would be probably generated by fossil fuels, which would just make the situation worse. Teresa, what's happening right now is probably similar to what has happened in parts of the country that are desert right now, but we can go back and look at, you know, climate records from 10, 11, 12,000 years ago during the Ice Age and see that, for example, in Arizona, they had forests. You know, I mean, you know, while the glaciers were up in Montana, there were giant forests all across Arizona, as I recall, maybe it was New Mexico, but you know, this was in Jared Diamond's book, Guns, Germs, and Steel, as I recall. And what happened was, as the climate changed around 10,000 years ago with the end of the Ice Age, as the climate changed, those forests caught on fire, they burned, they died out, they got attacked by insects, and they all eventually got replaced by saguaro cactuses and the landscape that you see in the high desert. So what's going to happen over the course of the next 100 years or so is that a lot of these forests up and down the West Coast, and frankly all over the American West, are going to be replaced by plants that are more drought resistant and that are more adaptable to a low, you know, we're not going to have these, you know, these rich, fulsome, living forests any longer. We're going to have more like, you know, high desert scrub. It certainly looks to me like that's the way things are going. I mean, I'm not a forest guy. I can't say that with certainty, but it seems logical. Greg in Hood River, Oregon. Hey, Greg, what's up?
When you put on your mask, I'm watching you on Facebook. You need to get you an air filter for the house.
We bought one on Amazon last Thursday or Wednesday, whatever day this all really started, and they said it would be here the next day. Then they said it would be here the day after that. Then it was scheduled for Saturday delivery, and this morning we got a notice that it seems to have disappeared. And would we like to cancel our order? And I'm guessing that they just slapped a label on the outside of an air filter box, and some enterprising Amazon employee said, "Oh, an air filter, I'd like one of those," and just took it home. Okay, it's the only thing I can figure out, but it has vanished. So instead of an air filter, you know, I'm running my air conditioner, and I'm wearing a mask. What can I say? But
yeah,
that's
well,
the story, Greg.
Well, I've got them installed in my home at the store I work at, and these are the negative ion generators with HEPA filters with a UVC light inside.
Oh, yeah,
and
HEPA filters,
I've been promoting these things as a possible solution for COVID-19.
Yep.
And here's my reasoning. The negative ion generator, it charges everything in the air and causes everything to plate out, including very fine particles like viruses.
Yep.
And
you just want to make sure that it's nowhere near you, because those things were real popular back in the 1990s when they first, you know, came into the marketplace. And what they found was that if they're near you, if you're inhaling the stream of ionized particles, they will stick to your lungs just as aggressively as they will stick to the plates. They stick to the walls. Mm-hmm. If you set one near your wall, after a couple of months, you'll notice your wall is getting all dirty. They will stick to anything that is not, you know, ionically charged. And so you've got to make sure that they're like on the other side of the house from you. But other than that, yeah. And the HEPA filters are great, you know, because they will get these, you know, 2 micron sized particles like we've got here right now. And the reason these particles are so deadly is because they are so small that they pass right through the lining of the lung into the bloodstream, and then they get into the brain, they get into the kidneys, they get into the liver, they get into the various organs and produce inflammation that can lead to things like strokes and heart attack and organ failure, basically. And so it's really important not to be breathing them. And here we've had, you know, 500 parts per cubic liter of air now for over 5 days now, I think, here in Portland. And my pets are coughing, and they won't wear masks no matter how hard you try. Try and put a mask on a cat, you know, or a dog for that matter. They don't even make them.
Oh, yeah. Well, in Hood River, it's running about 400. In the store I go to, I've put 3 of these HEPA filters plus 3 negative ion generators, and we can't even tell there's smoke outside.
That's so great. Greg, I wish ours had arrived. We got one for the studio so that Sean and Joyce have one. Got that like, you know, a few weeks ago for COVID viruses that might be floating around the inside of the office. But I should have got one for our house at the same time, but I just did not anticipate that global warming was going to wreak this kind of havoc this quickly. Greg, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Linwood in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. Hey, Linwood, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You know, you're talking about climate change and that. As bad as these forest fires are getting out west and they're going to actually be around the world eventually in other countries, isn't it time for our federal government to order our plane manufacturers to start making thousands of planes that can drop water on these fires?
It would be a good idea. Yeah, short term, it would be an excellent idea. And it's something that these forest fires didn't just happen in the last 3 weeks. I mean, this has been going on and getting steadily worse and worse and worse now for several decades. And certainly FEMA and other organizations. Here's how bad it is, Linwood. I tweeted this out. The entire Oregon congressional delegation, maybe we've got one Republican congressman, and maybe he didn't sign this, but I think he did. He's not running for re-election. As far as I know, the entire Oregon congressional delegation signed a letter to Donald Trump asking that he would release the FEMA money that he had promised for Oregon. Our governor, Kate Brown, had declared a state of emergency and asked the federal government, FEMA, to declare a state of emergency. They did so. But there was no follow-up. No money, no troops, no help. You know, Donald Trump is very enthusiastic to send federal troops into Portland if he thinks there might be some black people to beat their heads in, or some liberals that they can snatch off the streets in the middle of the night with unmarked vans. Oh, yeah, we're going to send the feds in. Yes, we're enthusiastic about that. But we got people dying in this state, and Donald Trump comes out and says, oh, you should rake your forests. This has nothing to do with global warming. There's nothing that we can do. We're just the federal government. It doesn't get more criminal and disgusting than that. Linwood, thank you for the call. Jeff in San Francisco. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
How can we put pressure on Congress? I'm going to go to my next Democratic committee meeting, September 23rd in San Francisco, to stop giving subsidies of, what is it, $650 billion we give to drill for more oil that's killing us? I mean, I'm in California.
Yeah, to the oil industry every year. Yeah, six-tenths of a trillion dollars.
Good news is today we've gone from unhealthy to a little less unhealthy, less orange.
Yeah.
How is it that we continue to give them these billions of dollars in subsidies instead of we put that into a new Green New Deal? We could loan it back to ourselves at 10 times that amount using a public banking. And this fallacy that we don't have enough money, how are we going to pay for it, is ridiculous. And we need to knock this down. I mean, how do they get this money to them? Do you understand that? Or should I call Pocan tomorrow about this?
No, there's dozens. And for those people watching us, apologies, I just put my mask back on. The air is so dangerous here in Portland, Oregon. I mean, the danger level is above 50 parts per cubic liter of air, and we're now above 500 right now, or above 400 right now, almost 500. And it's just wrecking my throat and lungs. But in any case, Jeff, the way that they get that money is there's, by the way, that $600 billion a year does not include the cost of the Navy protecting ships bringing foreign oil into the United States. That's just subsidies for domestic oil. And it includes things like the oil depletion allowance, which says, hey, if you drilled an oil well, you think there's $1 million worth of oil there, every year as that $1 million becomes $600,000 worth of oil, we're going to give you back the $300,000 that you just lost because you depleted the oil well and sold the oil. Right? I mean, you know, it's nuts when you think about it. You know, subsidies for fracking, massive subsidies, public lands, the use of public lands, the Interior Department giving away these lands. There's dozens of different places in the tax code and in our law that give the oil industry this money. It's not just one, hey, here's $600 billion. It's done dozens, maybe hundreds of ways. It doesn't all exist at the federal level. An awful lot of it, particularly the fracking subsidies, exist at the state level. It's going to require, number one, for all of us to wake the hell up to what's going on, to realize how insanely destructive fossil fuels are. They are the source of these more severe hurricanes. They are the source of these wildfires. It's burning fossil fuels. Number one, we have to wake the people the hell up. Number two, once we've woken them up, we need to mobilize political action against our political leaders. And frankly, I think that that's happening right now. The Sunrise Movement among young people is huge. The broader climate change and global warming movement, you know, do something about it, is huge. I don't think there was ever a better time to say, hey, there's better things we could do with that $600 billion. I mean, this is about the same size as the Pentagon budget every year, which is $700 billion. You know, we're just passing this money out to the oil industry or giving it to them in the form of, you know, reductions in taxes. I think, you know, we need to attack it in every way possible. So when you go to your Democratic meeting, Jeff, bring this up. Ask the question. Point it out. Because it's going to take a whole lot of different things to make it all happen. Tom in Edgewater, New Jersey. Hey, Tom, what's up?
I grew up in Belleville, Michigan, close to where you grew up. Mm-hmm. And my best friend's father was a top executive at Xerox. And he was talking to us when we were teenagers about Xerox having solar power. And I think They went for a big meeting in California. All the top executives went to Chicago. The plane took off and the engine fell off. I think
that DC-10.
Yes. And I think they were going to try to change the way that energy was used in this country.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I remember that that plane crash. For years, after that, every time I got on an airplane, I had to have at least two glasses of wine in me, and I would never again fly on a DC-10. And in fact, they took that plane out of service, because I think it was the right wing, the starboard wing engine fell right off.
And the plane flipped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't the plane.
I still remember it. Amazing. Tom, thanks for sharing the story with us. Thanks for the call. Grant in Everett, Washington. Hey, Grant, what's on your mind today?
Good day. I think that land and our natural resources, as they deal with the environment, is our most important subject. And to bring that subject into our houses and offices, I'd like to share that I listened to a talk by a Kamal Mitali on one of these video forums that rhymes with Red Rocks. And what he was doing was taking an office building in India and with plants, making it the cleanest air in India. He found several different types of plants that work best, and they have cleaned the air in an office building with plants.
Yeah, I understand houseplants can do that very well. Spider plants are particularly good at it. They cycle a lot, but you got to have a hell of a lot of plants, Grant. I've got a little, a mail order plant here for my office because I thought I needed something alive and something green in here. I have an arrowhead plant over there hanging in the window. And, I'm slowly trying to build up the number of plants here in my office because I like it. But
it's good alternative to a mechanical devices.
It takes dozens of feet of plant leaf surface area to have any kind of impact on even a relatively small amount of air. But yes, it can be done and it does help. And, thanks for pointing it out.
Definitely a challenge worth trying.
There you go. I'm with you. Thank you. Jack in Putney, Vermont, my old stomping grounds. Hey, Jack, what's up?
I'm going to do a rant. This damn climate thing that we have been exposing, that it's happening since the early 70s with the Green Movement, and these moronic Republicans, yes, Republicans, it's always the Republicans that fight it when issues come up. One of my worst enemies about it is Imhoff from, I can't remember what state he's from. Mm-hmm. This is ridiculous that we're still dealing with this. Ridiculous. Still having to talk about it with nothing really getting done on a level that it needs to. And so which pandemic is going to wipe us out? Climate change or this present or both of them together? It's absurd. I remember when I was in the service. When I got out of the service, I went out to L.A. to live. And I went up in the hills. Somebody said, you got to go up in the hills and look at this panoramic view of L.A. And I went up there, and this is in 1967. And I looked out over the horizon, and it was kind of a hot day. And I said, what the hell? You could barely see anything because of the smog. And that was the first time I had ever seen it. And then I lived out in Pomona, at the base of that big mountain out there, Baldy, I think it is. And literally when I would drive home from work, I would forget it was there because you could never see it. And every once in a while, you could see Baldy, and I go, I must be lost. I forgot that mountain. No, this is crazy. This is absolutely crazy that we can't get this done. And I don't know what it's going to take, but we cannot let this thing go on.
It's going to take the same thing, Jack, that cleaned up Los Angeles's air. And that's an outraged, informed, activated, politically activated populace. And I'm with you. Back in 1972, I got my pilot's license. And in 73 or 74, Louise and I flew a small plane, a Cherokee Aero, 4175 Tango, from Lansing, Michigan to Los Angeles. And, you know, hop skipping all the way across the country with our two-year-old in the back seat. And when we were coming into land in L.A., this was 73 or 74, when we were coming into land in L.A., it was like this giant dome over the city that was kind of yellowish, orangish, grayish.
Yeah.
And that was that smog that you're talking about. And Californians got it, and they did something about it. They demanded catalytic converters because most of that was coming from tailpipe exhaust.
Yeah.
And the catalytic converters solved the problem by the early 80s. We can do this. I mean, if people are sufficiently motivated, and God knows they should be now, if you think these wildfires are merely a problem on the West Coast, I'm telling you, it's coming to a town near you. They're moving from west to east right now. And they may not hit Indiana or Michigan or Louisiana or Tennessee or Kentucky. But instead, what's going to hit those states are derechos, if I'm saying that right. 10-mile-wide lines of tornadoes and massive flooding and drought. I mean, the weather has gone nuts all over the United States, and it's gone nuts because of global warming. The climate change is producing its change because it's different in different places, but that's what's going on. And the sooner we friggin' figure this out, the better.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Tom Harbin here with you out here on the left coast where the sky is orange. Or brown, or footsie, or kind of golden, actually. It's a very, very strange color. Not normal. We're finding that the levels of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere right now, compared to pre-industrial revolution, around the time of the American Revolution, are 147% up for carbon dioxide, 259% up for methane, that's almost tripled, and 123% higher for nitrous oxide. What does this mean, and where are we going with this? Dr. Michael Mann is on the line with us, the Distinguished Professor of Meteorology, the Director of the Earth Systems Science Center at Penn State University, member of the National Academy of Sciences, author of numerous books, his most recent, The Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy, and the recipient of the Tyler Prize. I'm seeing this report here that says that we might hit that 1.5 degree level that the IPCC said, don't go there, don't go above that. We might hit that as early as 2024. Am I reading that right?
There's a lot going on here. And the scenes that you describe and that I've seen playing out in California, we see on our television screens, the whole West Coast essentially on fire. The skies, as you note, are orange, red, yellow colors. They're not supposed to be. And this is disturbingly reminiscent for me of my experience just some months earlier this year when I was doing a sabbatical in Sydney, Australia. And whether you're Sydney, Australia, or California, you know, climate change is here. This is the face of climate change. It's not a far-off threat. It's leading to extreme weather events and disasters like we're seeing right now along the West Coast, as we also have seen an extremely busy and devastating Atlantic hurricane season here in the East that's likely to get even worse. So the problem's getting worse. As you know, this latest report, carbon dioxide concentrations continue to rise, and they will continue to rise as long as we emit carbon into the atmosphere. And there's sort of a misunderstanding that's fairly widespread here when it comes to the difference between the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere and our carbon emissions. So our carbon emissions have actually gone down about 4 or 5% this year. That's a good thing. But until we bring them down to zero, CO2 levels will continue to rise. It's sort of like the faucet in your sink, and you've got a tub of water. As long as the faucet is on, the water level is going to rise. The water level is our CO2 concentrations. The faucet is our carbon emissions, and we've got to bring them down to zero. Now, you also asked about this these dangerous thresholds that we are going to cross in the near future. If we don't bring our carbon emissions down by a factor of 2 within the next decade, then it will be very difficult to keep carbon dioxide levels below the levels that commit us to more than a degree and a half Celsius, a little under 3 degrees Fahrenheit warming. And that threshold will be crossed most likely a little bit later than what this recent report, the WMO report, claimed. They said, you know, by 2030. And that reflects a bit of a misunderstanding between sort of the rates of temperature change from year to year and sort of the longer term warming trend, because the temperatures fluctuate quite a bit from year to year, or even from one five-year period to another because of natural events like El Nino or volcanic eruptions. And so we measure the trend over, you know, a decade or two decades or longer. And that trend right now is about 0.2 degrees Celsius per decade. We're at about 1.2 Celsius. You know, your viewers can do the math if they like. But what that means is that we will cross the 1.5 degree Celsius, nearly 3 degree Fahrenheit threshold, about 2035 at the continued, at the rate that we're warming right now. So it's not quite as bad as the report made it sound. The report says 2030. It's more like 2035. But, you know, we're haggling over 5 years. Regardless of how you look at it, this is an unfolding crisis that will continue to get worse if we don't do something and do something immediately.
Yeah, back a decade ago when I used to actually be willing to debate these climate denying fools like Mark Morano, he used to come on the program fairly regularly, and you know, I would point out, or he would point out, he would say, you know, hey, our carbon dioxide levels right now are, you know, more than 100% what they were 200 years ago, and the weather's not that different. Why are you so upset? And my response was always, I think that, you know, it's like an ocean liner. I mean, you know, the atmosphere, the entire planet is this huge, massive thing. And, right, you know, you make these changes and it takes a while for those changes to filter into every dimension, every ecosystem, particularly the ones that are going to add on to the change that's already happening. And we're seeing that, right? I believe, I'd love to get your take on this. I believe we're seeing this right now. You know, over the last decade, these forests up and down the West Coast have been drying out because of climate change. Yep. While it didn't immediately burst into flames, it took a decade for all the trees to dry out and many of them to die off so that they're now tinder. And then that is going to be throwing more particulate matter into the atmosphere, and it's going to reduce the number of trees that are, you know, cycling carbon back into the, you know, that. Right. And then it's the same thing with the peat, you know, with the permafrost up in the northern climates. It takes a while for it to thaw out, but once it thaws out, all hell breaks loose. Or do I have that wrong?
No, you've got it right. We are the Titanic. You know, we are this huge ocean liner, and we've got to steer away from this iceberg that is getting closer and closer. And just as the Titanic found it couldn't steer fast enough to avoid it, you know, that's the problem that we will face if we don't steer away from the iceberg immediately, which means to, you know, ramp down our carbon emissions. There are sort of what we call threshold responses here. You know, sometimes we call them tipping points. The melting of the ice sheets is one of the tipping points we worry about. If we warm the planet up enough, then we can't stop the collapse of the West Arctic and Greenland ice sheet, and we get literally tens of feet of sea level rise, meters of sea level rise. In this case, there may also be a threshold when it comes to wildfires. There's some, you know, indication now that once you raise temperatures enough and you dry things out enough, you get qualitatively different types of wildfires. Wildfires that burn much hotter, spread much faster, cover much wider areas. And you hear firefighters now. We heard this down in Australia saying, we have never seen fires like this during, you know, the Black Summer, we're calling it, last summer in Australia, when the entire continent caught fire, essentially. The firefighters were saying, we've never seen fires like this that spread so quickly, that burn this intensely. We don't know how to combat them. They are far more deadly to combat. That's what we're seeing now. So, you know, we've warmed up planet enough. We've dried out the subtropics, which is one of the predictions that climate models made decades ago. You know, we'll make it hotter, we'll make it drier in places like California and Australia. You put those two things together, you get worse wildfires. But once it gets hot enough and dry enough, and that's where we are, that's the territory we're moving into, you get qualitatively worse, unprecedented wildfires that are like nothing we've seen before. And we're now looking at 2.5 million acres burned in California alone. Right now, burning California are the second, third, and fourth largest wildfire on record. The first being Camp Fire 2 years ago that happened in the winter, not even the dry season.
Yeah, and we're just at the very beginning now of a fire season for California.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Dr. Mann, thanks so much for being with us today. It's great talking with you.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure. And check out Dr. Mann's newest book, The Madhouse Effect, his website, michaelmannwith2ns.net. On the line with us is Dr. Mustafa Santiago Ali. He is a former EPA official who actually helped found the EPA's Department of Environmental Justice, their Office of Environmental Justice, and now has some thoughts and some concern. His website, by the way, MustafaSantiagoAli.com, spelled pretty much just exactly the way it sounds. Twitter handle is EJIN Action. Dr. Ali, welcome back to the program. I see the Trump's current EPA chief has a new vision for the agency that some critics are calling apocalyptic, that it'll produce a devastated planet. First of all, welcome back to the program. And secondly, I'm curious your thoughts on the direction that the EPA has taken versus where it was at when you were there.
It's dangerous. It's extremely dangerous for everyone in our country, but especially for our most vulnerable communities. Communities that have been disproportionately impacted for decades upon decades. In some instances, with this administration, they have placed crosshairs on these communities, the sacrifice zones, if you will, the dumping grounds for everything that nobody else wants in our country. And because of that, they put people in very dangerous situations, both from pollution and from viruses and from the impacts from climate change.
What was the EPA doing about this when you were there? And how has that changed?
Well, when I was there, you know, I started off at the Environmental Protection Agency as a student, and then over the years, you know, worked my way up the ladder. It was focused on our most vulnerable communities, on environmental justice communities. That trust that had to be built took time. It took folks being transparent and honest. It also made sure that vulnerable communities, communities of color, lower wealth communities, and indigenous brothers and sisters had a seat at the table to help to frame out the policies that would impact them either in a negative or a positive direction. And of course, we were focused on the positive and making sure that, you know, we were minimizing and mitigating air pollution and water pollution, and also, of course, dealing with the issues on our lands. So now this administration, as everyone has seen, you know, over 100 environmental and climate rollbacks from this administration have sent a very clear message. the lives in these communities don't have value. And it's easy to sort of analyze that, even though I know this administration places no value whatsoever on science. And of course, they have a very tenuous relationship with the law. You can very easily see we've got 100,000 people who are dying each year in our country prematurely from air pollution. You know, the previous administrations, both Democrat and Republicans, and we should call that out because I worked under both of those, knew that you had to figure out a way to lessen the impacts that were happening from both air pollution and water pollution and other forms of pollution. Each of those times, people were trying to figure out, well, how do we strengthen what's there so that people are more protected? This administration has taken a completely different path where the lives in those communities have been of no value because they have not been a part of overall analysis that has happened. You know, let's just real quickly run through some of the things that they've done. So, you know, we had worked before to have the Clean Power Plan in place to limit emissions, especially focusing on vulnerable communities, but overall to lower emissions for our country and for our planet. They did not see any value in that. When you look at the Clean Car Rule, we know that, and I'm sorry, Tom, let's just call it out like it is. We know that systemic racism has played a role historically in many of the policies that we have, whether we're talking about transportation or housing or the environment. So when you roll back something like the Clean Car Rule, we know that in many instances, our roads and highways have been used to separate certain communities, move wealth into some communities, and dump off pollution into others. So when you're saying that the pollution that's coming out of the back of those tailpipes, you know, it's okay for that to continue or to actually increase, then you're also sending a message to those vulnerable communities who are, in many instances, the ones who are closely located to our roads and our highways, that, you know, it's okay for you to have those additional impacts.
Dr. Mustafa Santiago Ali, which is .com is his website, EJIN Action, the Twitter handle. Dr. Ali, thank you so much for dropping by today. It's always great talking with you.
Thank you.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. Joe in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind?
Oh, just watching you having to breathe through a mask and listen to everyone talk about ways we can filter the air. And I was thinking that working class people and their children already, maybe a couple of decades now or longer, have been needing to do that in inner cities and urban areas. It's from a very similar pollution. You know, it's petrochemical industry making a fortune by polluting our air, and now, you know, we got carbon dioxide fueling, and all carbons really fueling the global warming, and afraid we're getting what I call frog, which is kind of a thing, you know, on the frog in the pot being brought to a boil. That you know, when I was young, I grew up on a farm, we drank water out of a well, and now supposedly drink bottled water or filtered water or whatever, and it would be easier and more cost-effective for the society if we just didn't put the damn pollutants in there to begin with, and yep. Instead of having to take them out. And now we're doing the same thing, and I'm afraid if not bottled air, then we're already at a point where we need filtered air similar to we just need filtered water. And it's all just for maximizing the profit of certain industries, and as you've said in your book, in monopolies. I haven't had time to read that yet, but looking forward to it. You know, that's in their oligarchic power
yeah.
to control regulation.
Yeah, here's the question, Joe. Do you think the next great product that Nestle will have, I think they're the largest purveyor of bottled water on Earth, and you know, and now they're talking about sucking water out of Lake Michigan and everything. Do you think the next great product is going to be bottled air, you know, air captured at the top of Mount Everest or something where it's truly pure? And, you know, people will sit around. I know that they've got, you know, in Los Angeles, they have oxygen bars, right? Where you go in and instead of getting a drink, you get a sip of straight oxygen. You know, I think Woody Harrelson even started one or ran one or something like that. You know, here we go. And Joe, I think you put your finger on it. Thanks a lot for the call, Joe. It's great to hear from you. Jeff in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Tom. Thanks for soldiering on in these horrific conditions here. You know, I think it's the fifth or sixth day in a row where we've had the worst air in the world.
Yep.
Horrific. But the reason I'm calling was at the end of your opening rant, you asked, what are we going to do to turn back Reaganism? And although it's only the first step, the obvious answer is we must defeat Trump in November. And a couple yes. days ago, you retweeted a video of the Black Lives Matter protest during the Seattle Seahawks game, what they did on the opening kickoff, which was really ingenious. And I think when it comes to this election, we can all benefit by following the mantra that the quarterback for the Seahawks uses, Russell Wilson. His mantra is preparation is separation, meaning the more you plan, the harder you work, and the better prepared you are, you're going to separate yourself and rise above your opponent. And, you know, we have the deeper, smarter, more talented team when it comes to this election. If we all focus on getting out the vote, protecting the vote, educating ourselves about waiting for all the votes to be counted, which might take a few days or week or longer after November 3rd, if we do all that, well, Joe and Kamala make a forceful and passionate case for what they're going to do to fight the virus, fight climate change, put the country back on track. I don't think we can lose. What do you think, Tom?
I think you're right, Jeff, broadly speaking. The one thing that I would be keeping my eye on, and I haven't, you know, it's so painful for me to watch Fox News that I haven't been able to do this, but people who watch CNN and MSNBC already are prepared, essentially. They know that on the night of the election, the early votes are going to come in from Trump humpers who think that there's no problem and they show up at the polls. And so in all probability, the night of the election, Trump will be ahead in the returns. And over the next 3 or 4 days, as the mail-in votes get counted, and in some states it could take up to a week or two, as those mail-in votes get counted, it's going to shift to Biden. And people watching CNN or MSNBC or the big networks understand that. But I don't know what's going on over in Fox News. Are the Fox News folks talking in terms of, you know, the evening of November 3rd, we're going to know who's our president? Are they priming people for that, which will cause people to think that as the vote shifts toward Biden, something nefarious is going on? Or are they actually informing their viewers, and the same thing for Right Wing Hate Radio, that it's probably going to be a week, maybe 2 weeks, before we know who actually won this election? That's the kind of thing that concerns me, is how they twist this, how they turn it into propaganda. Jeff, thank you. Spot on. Step by step, yes. Number one step in defeating Reaganism is to defeat Donald Trump, because he's the peak of Reaganism. The logical endpoint of the policies that Ronald Reagan put into place when he completely changed our economic and political system in 1981 is Donald Trump.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.